4. A lot more dangerous, too. 5. Somewhere in my crazy imagination, Leo the Silent was smiling. Chapter 16. Good morning! In the morning, Miller was back to his old self. I know, because when I woke up, he was right there in my face, making sounds like a gorilla trying not to laugh. "What are you doing?" I said, sitting up fast. I guess I forgot to relock that bathroom door in the middle of the night. "Get out!" he growled. "Yeah, all right," I said, getting out of the tub. "But now that I spent the whole night in here, we're even for what happened on the plane. Okay?"
"We'll see," Miller said, and slammed the bathroom door closed behind me.
In other words, we weren't even yet. In fact, by the time he came back out, he was smiling bigger than ever. And when I went to brush my teeth, I found out why.
"What did you do with my toothbrush?" I yelled.
And I heard some more of that gorilla giggling from the other room.
"Nothing," Miller said. "I mean, I might have cleaned my toenails a little bit."
"What?" I said.
"Don't be a baby," Miller said.
Oh, man. This was exactly what I thought rooming with Miller would be like. In the worst possible way.
"So now we're even," I said. "Okay?"
"Sure," Miller said. "Whatever."
And that's when I saw my best pen sitting on the bathroom floor with the cap off, which is also just before I looked in the mirror and found out what all that stupid gorilla giggling was really about when I woke up. I had a mustache, unibrow, and goatee drawn on my face. So, despite whatever had been bothering Miller in the middle of the night, he was in a way better mood now. Probably because the sun was up, and he could get back to playing with his own personal stress ball. Also known as me. Chapter 17. Chiefly Speaking. Speaking of stress, things only got weirder at breakfast. That's when Mrs. Stricker got up to make the morning announcements. Well, announcement, I guess. Singular. It might have just been one, but it was a doozy.
"I hope you all have your cameras and travel journals with you this morning," she said. "I expect you all to take good notes as we set out today. And on that topic, I'd like to announce that the editor-in-chief for our Living Learning Report will be..."
There was only about a nanosecond between that part of Mrs. Stricker's sentence and the next part. But I swear, it was enough time for every eyeball in the room to turn Jeannie's way. Right before Stricker said,
"Rafe Kachadorian!"
And
ping!
That's the sound of the giant pin you could hear dropping in the room after Mrs. Stricker said I'd be in charge. It was that quiet. I think everyone thought they must have heard wrong. Like, maybe Mrs. Stricker had given the job to some new kid named Schmafe Schmachadorian. Because the real truth was even weirder than that. The first one to speak up was Simon.
"Really?"
he said. The second, third, and fourth ones were Katrina, Maya P., and Lily. I mean, if laughing counts.
"Yes, really,"
Mrs. Stricker said. Then she named off the topic leaders. Isaiah for arts, Allison for politics, Mackenzie for history, Simon for science, and, of course, Jeannie for current events. Because, you know, things weren't already weird enough. When I looked over at Jeannie, she looked like she was about to cry. She'd probably already been thinking about how that editor-in-chief job was going to look on her pre-college applications. Is that a real thing? I don't even know. I just know that seeing Jeannie fight back those tears made me feel like the lowest piece of dirt on the dirt clod on the bottom of the shoe of a bottom-feeding bottom feeder. It didn't help that Jared was staring at me, too, like I'd just stolen something from his girlfriend, which I kind of had, even if it wasn't on purpose. Sound familiar? It should. In other words, day two was off to just as good a start as day one. Chapter 18. Get on the Bus. When we came out of the hotel, there was this big double-decker tour bus waiting for us. It was all open on the top level, like a giant convertible, so you know everyone went straight for those seats. That left me two options. One, I could stay down below with Mrs. Stricker and the driver, like a gigantic loser. Or two, I could go up with everyone else, where they could all see me sitting by myself with nobody to talk to, also like a gigantic loser. I figured I might as well be outside. At least then I'd get more of a view, more fresh air, and less Mrs. Stricker. I even snagged one of the good seats near the front, until I let Cedric and Olivia take it instead. I was still trying to do the whole nice thing, but they didn't even thank me. Then, when Mrs. Stricker took roll call and got to my name, Miller just kept the yucks coming and answered for me. It was actually a half-decent imitation of my stupid, cracking voice. One half here, and one half honk. But I wasn't laughing. Not like everyone else was. The good news is, things got a little better after that. It turns out that London's a really cool city. Once we finally got rolling, we saw about 18 different parks, and this whole waterfront with all kinds of stuff to do along the River Thames, which sounds like Thames if you're speaking British, by the way. You'd think since they invented English over here, they'd be better at pronouncing it right. It seemed like every time I turned around, I was looking at either the world's oldest buildings or the newest skyscrapers on the planet. They have this one called the Gherkin that looks about one massive ignition away from liftoff. At first, I tried taking notes for my report, but it wasn't so easy on a moving bus. I tried drawing, too, but it all came out looking terrible. Yeah, that wasn't going to win any contests. So I took out my phone and turned on the video instead. That was the way to go. I got some great shots of the Victoria and Albert Museum, and this giant store called Harrods, and Buckingham Palace, which, to be honest, I thought was going to look like a big castle, but doesn't. And here's what I figured out pretty quick after that. When you've got no one to talk to, a video camera can be your best friend. Seriously. It totally gave me something to do besides sitting there feeling like I had a contagious disease. That was when I started getting really into it, too. I remember because when that bus turned into Green Park, I tried my first real movie move with the camera. I pointed my phone back at Buckingham Palace, then swooped it up toward the sky, turned around fast, and came down again, like we'd just landed in the park out of nowhere. Then I played it back for myself, and I'm not going to lie, it looked awesome. It was like I'd strapped the camera to some superhero's head just before he made the world's biggest leap. So I kept going. I panned around the park, up into the trees, down again, and then way in close on some black swans in the water. The way they were flapping their beaks, it looked like you could give them human voices in the video and do something funny with that. Probably with an English accent. I didn't know how all this was going to fit into our living learning report yet, but I didn't even care. I was finally having a good time. In fact, I started thinking maybe this was my new thing. Maybe instead of drawing all the time, I'd make videos instead. Cool videos. The kind that go mega viral in a matter of seconds. And maybe, just maybe, after someone discovered me on YouTube, everything would take off. I'd be a real director then, working with big stars and making even bigger money. I'm talking about the kind of cash that buys you sharks that do tricks in your aquarium, overlooking the Hollywood Hills, and private jets to Hawaii for breakfast, because sometimes you just have to have those pineapple pancakes at your favorite place. What is he doing? I have no idea. He is so weird sometimes. It's like he lives in his own world or something. I know, right? Oops. I was getting so into my video that I kind of forgot everyone else was there. It felt like the real world went away for a minute, and it was just me and my phone camera doing our thing. That was until I heard those girls behind me. That brought me right back to planet Earth. I recognized Sabra's and Katrina's voices, but I didn't have the nerve to turn around. I mean, he's not so shrimpy anymore, Katrina said. That was a good thing, right? They noticed I'd gotten taller. Maybe not tall, but taller. At least I wasn't the shortest kid in the class anymore. And he's cuter than he was in sixth grade, Sabra said. Me? Cuter? Really? I couldn't believe it. Ew, you think Rafe's cute? Katrina said. I mean, just in a dorky kind of way, Sabra said. Well, I guess I can see that, Katrina said, right before they both cracked up. And I thought, yeah, that's more like it. Welcome back to the real world. Chapter 19. Tower Power. Our first stop was the Tower of London. If you haven't heard of it, it's this 1,000-year-old fort where a bunch of people got their heads chopped off back in the really, really old days. So yeah, most of us were pretty interested. Our tour guide was a guy named Gordon. He had this old-school uniform with a big hat and told us he was a yeoman warder of the tower. They nicknamed those guys beefeaters, because supposedly, back when it was a real prison, the guards were allowed to eat all the best meat from the king's fridge. I wanted to ask if you could be a vegetarian and still work there, but I decided to keep my mouth shut instead. Anyway, Gordon was pretty cool. He was also way funnier than you think someone could be, talking about things like the Bloody Tower and Traitor's Gate, and how they used a sword instead of an axe on Anne Boleyn's head. That special treatment was because she was King Henry VIII's wife, and also because an axe can get a bit messy, according to Gordon. Some say London is the world's most haunted city, he told us, and that this very tower is its most haunted building. He winked when he said the last part, but it gave me the shivers. If Gordon was right, then all those executions happened right there, on the exact same ground where we were standing. So, just to be on the extra safe side, I kept my camera running. I'm not saying I believe in ghosts, but if they were real, and I got a picture of one, can you imagine how fast we'd win that contest? So, when Gordon said it was time to queue up, which means get in line, for the gems and jewels part of the tour, I was a little bummed. I wanted to stay outside and see more of the creepy, ghosty, prison-y stuff. Visiting a bunch of jewelry in glass cases didn't sound nearly as cool to me. And it wasn't. In fact, what happened next was extremely not cool. And of course, it was all my fault. Chapter 20. Rules and Jewels. The first thing we had to do before we went inside was hear about all the rules. They had more rules for seeing the crown jewels than Mrs. Stricker has for Hills Village Middle School. Actually, no, they don't. Nobody has more rules than Mrs. Stricker. But there were a lot, anyway. Please maintain an orderly line. Keep your voices down. Respect the boundaries. Do not touch the cases. Keep moving. Do not block access for others, Gordon recited, like he'd said it 100 times before. I didn't even catch all of it, but I got his drift. No messing around with the jewels! And no video either, so I had to put my camera away. Gordon said there were more than 23,000 diamonds, emeralds, rubies, and sapphires in the vault, guarded every hour of every day of the year. I asked him how much it was all worth, but he just said the collection was priceless, which is like saying it cost infinity, give or take a couple of dollars. For me, the coolest part was the entrance. You walk in through these giant 4-ton doors, like walking into a real bank vault. And then there were the people movers. Once we got inside, the way to see everything was to stand on these conveyor belts, like the electric sidewalks at the airport. Then you just kind of ride past the jewels without having to walk or anything. I'll be honest, I thought it was kind of boring. Like taking an hour to walk through a jewelry store. Ghosts and rolling heads beat diamonds and rubies every time. Especially if they're not even giving out free samples. But then I noticed Bobby. He had his notebook out and kept trying to get to the front where he could see better. I guess he wanted to write about those jewels for his part of the report. I didn't mention this before, but Bobby's one of the shortest kids in our class. Just like I used to be, which was just the worst. So I took a step back and made some room for him on the conveyor belt. "Go ahead," I said. I didn't want Bobby to think I was trying too hard to make friends, but I still wanted to do something nice for him. Especially something that had zero chance of making him throw up. Bobby didn't say anything. He just moved around to get a better view while I got out of his way. For about half a second. It's pretty dark in that vault, so I didn't see exactly what happened. All I know is that when I stepped out of Bobby's way, someone else's foot got tangled up with mine. And the last thing I saw before everything went kerflooey was Jared McCall looking down at me, smiling. The next thing I knew, I spun around and fell right into one of those big jewelry cases, right before I ricocheted off it and hit the floor. All I left behind was a nose print and two streaks where my hand slid down the glass. That conveyor belt was still going, too. A second later, I got spat out onto the carpet while a bunch of people jumped out of the way, trying not to get knocked over like bowling pins. Three words. Major security disaster. A bunch of guards came running over, along with Mrs. Stricker. All the lights clicked on. Everyone stopped what they were doing, and I was wondering how this could have gone so bad so fast. Again! Do not touch the glass! No horseplay will be tolerated in here! Young man, get off the ground! What is going on here? Mrs. Stricker yelled. Rafe tried to push Bobby, someone said. What? I looked over, and it was Jared's best friend, Colin, who'd said it. Jared was just standing there, staring at me. And he was still smiling. But then Bobby spoke up next. It wasn't Rafe's fault, Bobby said. And I was like, huh? He was just trying to get out of my way, he said. That's all. It was an accident. I guess Bobby knew I was trying to do him a favor. And maybe he'd even started to figure out that I was never trying to make him spew on that plane in the first place. So even though all those guards were looking for someone to blame, and Jared had probably just tripped me on purpose, even though I couldn't prove it, and I still had Mrs. Stricker hating me, it was also kind of cool, too. Like maybe, finally, being nice had started to pay off, just a tiny bit. With Bobby, I mean. I still had everyone else to deal with. Starting with Mrs. Stricker. Chapter 21 Thin Ice. When everyone went outside to get fish and chips for lunch, Mrs. Stricker made me stay back for another talking to. Mrs. Stricker, I told her, I know how that looked, but it's like Bobby said. What I know, Rafe, is that trouble seems to follow you wherever you go, she said. Whether it's your fault or not. But, I said, I don't want to hear about your but, she told me.
Do you understand? Not one more but out of you. As far as I'm concerned, that was your last but.
I honestly didn't mean to laugh, but come on. You would have too, right? You can only listen to a grown-up say but so many times in a row without busting up.
Is something funny? Mrs. Stricker barked.
No, I said, and then I tried to think about the saddest things I could to keep from cracking another smile while Mrs. Stricker finished yelling at me. The good news was I didn't get in any more trouble. Mrs. Stricker didn't cut off my head or put me in a timeout or whatever you do for detention when the detention room is on the other side of the ocean. The bad news was she told me I was back on thin ice. If I didn't watch myself and fly right for the rest of the trip, I was headed straight for that automatic F, which meant staying in middle school another whole year. In other words, the pressure was still on, more than ever. I needed to figure out this editor-in-chief business ASAP. That's how editors say as soon as possible. And there was only one person I could think of who might help me with it. The trick was going to be getting her to talk to me. Chapter 22. A little help? Anyone? Once Mrs. Stricker let me go, I went outside, where everyone was having lunch by the river. I skipped the fish and chips and went looking for Jeannie instead. When I found her, she was eating with Morgan and Allison, which didn't help. The two of them looked like they wanted to strap some chum to my arms, throw me in the river, and hope some sort of river shark came swimming along. At least Jared wasn't there, because I had enough on my mind already. Most of all right now, I had to worry about Jeannie. "Hey, Jeannie, can I talk to you?" I said. "Like, maybe in private?" Except, of course, it came out like this. "Like, maybe in private?" I think my voice hates me. Either that or I have the worst luck in the history of hormones. Jeannie didn't laugh, though, unlike her friends, which was nice. I couldn't tell what she was thinking, but she did get up and follow me away from Morgan and Allison so I could finish embarrassing myself in private. "What's up?" she asked me. I tried to swallow, but my throat was like one big piece of dried leather. Now that we were alone, I couldn't stop thinking about what Leo had told me the night before. It was like he was right there, coming in loud and clear. Finally, I got it out. "The truth is, I need to ask you a favor," I told her. "But I also want to say that I'm really sorry about the whole editor-in-chief thing. I never asked for that job. I swear."
"It's okay, Rafe," Jeannie said.
"I know."
"You do?"
"Yeah," she said. "I mean, come on. This is me you're talking to. We're not exactly strangers." I wasn't really sure what that meant. I mean, I understood the words, but I didn't know what Jeannie was trying to say.
"You seemed kind of upset about it this morning," I said.
"I was," Jeannie said. "But I think I was mostly embarrassed."
"Why should you be embarrassed?" I asked. "You didn't do anything."
"I know," she said. "It's just that I'm used to being in charge with that kind of stuff. And now, well, you're in charge."
"Oh," I said. I was starting to figure it out. "So are you saying you were embarrassed because you didn't get to be editor, or because I did?"
"Neither," Jeannie said. "I didn't mean it like that. It's just, I really wanted us to win that contest," Jeannie said.
I'm not going to lie. That hurt my feelings. A lot. Which is stupid. I mean, it's not like I thought I could do a better job than Jeannie. I didn't think I could do it at all. So why should it matter if Jeannie thought so too? But here's the thing. It did matter.
"This is coming out all wrong," Jeannie said. "Please don't be mad, Rafe."
"I'm not," I said.
"Yes, you are," she said.
"Yes, I was."
"Sure, She was right about us probably losing the contest because of me, but it was super confusing, too. I mean, trying to be mad at Genie is like trying to be mad at chocolate cake. How are you supposed to do that? Meanwhile, my heart was pumping, my face was hot, and I felt like I'd just run a mile in concrete socks. "I've gotta go," I said.
"Rafe, come back," Genie said. "Didn't you say you wanted to ask me a favor?"
But it was too late. I couldn't stop walking away now. So I just kept going, as far away from Genie as I could get, and that many steps closer to that automatic F. Chapter 23. History and Mystery. After dinner that night, I spent a long time in the learning center at the hotel. That was like a classroom they had set up for us, with tables and computers and stuff. First, we had a team meeting. That's what Mrs. Stricker called it. All the topic leaders were there, including Genie, of course. Also Ms. Donatello, Mr. Rourke, Mrs. Stricker, and me. And yeah, the whole thing was about as comfortable as a sandpaper straitjacket. Genie kept looking at me across the table, and I spent most of the time saying stuff like, "uh-huh," and "okay," and "that sounds good," because everyone had better ideas than me. When Mrs. Stricker asked what I thought the theme for our report should be, I said, London? People actually thought it was a joke. But the truth is, that's the best I could come up with on the spot. Everyone kept looking at me like they were wondering what I was doing there, and the whole idea of winning that contest was feeling more and more like climbing Mount Everest blindfolded during a snowstorm. After I finished coming up with exactly zero good ideas for our theme, Mrs. Stricker said we should organize what we had so far by topic and start posting it online. But then I said I'd do that part myself. And that was for two reasons. Actually three. Well, actually four. One, I wanted out of that meeting the way a turkey wants out of a turkey sandwich. Two, I wasn't exactly in a hurry to go hang out in my room with Miller either. Three, I was still trying to do at least one nice thing for everyone on the trip. Four, so far, I'd been nothing but dead weight. I needed to show Mrs. Stricker I could do this, even if I was pretty sure I couldn't. Then, when everyone got up to leave, Genie kind of hung back a bit. She looked like she wanted to say something to me, and I think she was about to. But then Jared showed up out of nowhere. I couldn't even look at Jared. I still didn't know for sure that he was the one who tricked me at the jewel display, but I was pretty sure. And the embarrassing truth is, I was kind of scared of him. He wasn't as big and strong as Miller, but he was still bigger and stronger than me, and way more popular, too. And in my world, that's like having a whole extra set of fists. I didn't know what to say to Genie, anyway. I kind of owed her an apology, but at the same time, she really owed me one, too. Not that it mattered, because a second later, she and Jared went off to do whatever it is popular people do with their friends in London. And I was left in the learning center by myself. Maybe day three would be better than day two, I thought. But what I didn't know was that day two hadn't ended yet. In fact, it was about to get a whole lot more interesting. Chapter 24. Snoop on the Loose. It was just before curfew when I finished working in the learning center and headed upstairs. I pretty much expected some kind of Miller-related disaster to be waiting up there for me. Like maybe all my boxers would be flushed on the toilet. Or worse. But when I opened the door, Miller was just sitting on his bed and talking on the phone. The second he saw me, he told whoever it was that he had to go. Then he jumped up and headed straight for the bathroom door.
"I'm taking a shower," he said. "You wait out here."
As if I was going to follow him in there. 2 seconds later, he was in there with the water running, and I was wondering what had just happened. It didn't seem like he was crying or anything, but something was definitely up. It seemed like a perfect chance to do a little looking around and see what I could find out. If this were my sister, I'd call it snooping, but this was me, so let's call it investigative reporting. And there was plenty to investigate. The room looked like Hurricane Miller had just hit, right on top of Tornado Miller, and just after Earthquake Miller. Seriously, Miller was a bigger slob than me, and that's saying something. The first thing I saw was Miller's report packet. It was sitting half under the bed, and looked like he hadn't even brought it with him that day. I don't think he was too worried about getting a good grade, or any grade, really. I think Miller had something else on his mind. But what was it? Mostly, I was interested in his phone. It was just sitting where he'd tossed it on the nightstand, partly hidden by a hotel brochure, 3 empty water bottles, and about 18 different candy wrappers. I really wanted to see who Miller had been talking to when he was crying the night before. But I didn't want to actually touch his stuff. That just felt a little gross. I mean, even Miller deserved his privacy. Besides, when my finger maybe, kind of, accidentally brushed against the phone to turn it on, a security screen lit up. I'd have to figure out some other way to find out what was going on with him.
"What are you doing?" Miller roared behind me.
When I turned around, he was standing there in all his clothes, with his head soaking wet. He had a towel in his hand, but mostly he was dripping all over the floor.
"That was your shower?" I said. "You must be going for a world record."
Miller took a step closer.
"I said, what are you doing?"
"Nothing," I said. By now, I was practically passing out and peeing my pants at the same time. It felt like I was standing under a heat lamp, and all I wanted to do was change the subject.
"I was just, I said. "Just what?" he said.
When I looked down at his phone again, I saw that hotel brochure and picked it up.
"I was just looking at this," I said.
"What for?" Miller said.
He was squinting at me now, like he wasn't done being suspicious yet, which made sense. I don't think I was selling this very well. It also meant I wasn't done being maybe dead yet. I looked at the brochure again. On the cover it said, "Welcome to the Helmsman's Arms, and complimentary Wi-Fi, and enjoy our seasonal roof terrace." And I thought, bingo.
"I was thinking about checking out the roof of this place," I said. "You want to come?"
I don't think he was expecting that. Heck, I was barely expecting it myself until it popped out of my mouth. But the faster I got Miller away from the scene of my not-quite-a-crime, the better.
"Huh. What about the security guy?" Miller said.
"There's ways around that," I told him, which was true. Mrs. Stricker had hired this overnight guard to make sure we all stayed in our rooms while the chaperones were asleep. He had a little desk in the hall, but mostly he kept on the move, from the boys' floor to the girls' floor to the boys' floor to the girls' floor, just all night. But that also meant he was only around half the time.
"Yeah, okay," Miller said. "I'm in."
Which is right around when I started thinking my great idea wasn't so great after all. I mean, a high rooftop isn't exactly the safest place in the world to hang out with someone who has the word killer in his name. All kinds of stuff could happen up there. Most of it bad.
"You know what?" I said. "Maybe we should just watch a movie or something instead. That could be just as..."
"Too late," Miller said.
He was already heading for the door and dragging me there with him.
"Because now you've got me interested, and you're the one who knows how to do it. Let's go."
So we went. Chapter 25. Mission Roof Possible. Before we went anywhere, I looked at the hotel map on the back of our door. It showed where the stairwell was, in case we needed to get out in an emergency. But we didn't need to go down right now. We needed to go up. The good news was, every time the security guy opened that stairwell door to head down to the girls' floor, it made this squeaking sound and then slammed shut behind him when it closed. So we could hear when he was on the move, no problem. The bad news was, we had to use that same door to get to the roof. It was going to be risky, but not impossible. As soon as we heard the next squeak and slam, I opened our hotel room door and leaned out into the hall.
"Anyone?"
Miller whispered behind me.
"Nope."
It was deserted. But there was one more piece of bad news. When I looked down, I saw a piece of blue tape stuck to the edge of our door. It was the same on Martin and Kadir's door across the hall, and Rudy and Simon's door next to that. The difference was, those pieces of tape were still plastered across the crack like they were supposed to be. I guess security guy had a few tricks up his sleeve. That tape was like an alarm system. If it was unstuck when he came back, that meant someone was out of their room.
"What do we do about that?"
Miller said.
"We'll figure it out later,"
I whispered. The damage was already done. It wasn't like we could put that tape back from inside our room, and they'd know if we just stayed out all night. So I closed the door behind us, pressed it into place to make it look like we were still there, and kept moving.
"Let's go,"
I told Miller. We rushed on our tiptoes down to the stairwell door. Then I held up a hand for him to wait again. This was the trickiest part, and I wanted to go first. The trick is to open a squeaky door at just the right speed. That way, if it creaks, it only makes a tiny sound. Then you kind of press through sideways so you don't open the door any more than you have to. I showed Miller, and then he did it behind me. The whole hotel was 12 stories high, so we huffed up a ton of stairs after that, until we got to a dead end at the roof door. A bunch of folding chairs were leaning against the wall on the landing, and I grabbed one. Miller opened the door, I propped it open, and we ducked outside. It was dark on the roof. It looked like they had a restaurant up here when the weather was warmer. Now it was like a ghost restaurant. But that wasn't the cool part. Spread out all around us, in every direction, there were city lights as far as I could see. We weren't that high up, but the view was awesome. I took out my phone and started panning it back and forth for some good shots of the city.
"What are you doing?"
Miller said. "Making a movie," I said.
"Seriously?" he said.
"Well, a video, anyway. I'm still figuring it out," I told him.
"What a geek,"
he laughed. Then we just hung out there for a while, not saying anything at all. It was actually almost kind of peaceful, which was pretty weird with Miller standing right next to me. And that's when I started thinking about something else. I don't know why I didn't think of it before, but there was a reason Miller and I were stuck rooming together. And it wasn't just because Bobby kicked me out. The thing was, neither one of us had any friends on this trip. All the Neanderthals Miller usually hung out with were back in Hills Village. Nobody wanted to room with him here. The same way nobody wanted to room with me. It was like the first thing we'd ever had in common. Which, I guess, is how I ended up 3,000 miles from home, hanging out on a dark rooftop with my biggest enemy ever, way past curfew. Sometimes my life is so weird, I can't even believe it. Chapter 26. Cutting It Close. By the time we snuck back down to the fifth floor hall, I still hadn't figured out what to do about that blue tape on our door. But Miller was way into it now, and getting in on the planning.
"Hey, I know," he whispered. "What if we go through Bobby and Tyler's room?
Then we can go out their window, around the outside, and back into our room.
Seriously? I said. You must watch even more movies than me. And besides, that wouldn't help.
Why not? He said.
Think about it, I said.
You think about it, he snarled.
I was going to explain all the thousands of reasons that was a terrible idea, but then we heard a squeak and a slam coming from one floor down. That meant security guy was on his way back. Our time was up.
What do we do now? Miller said.
Just go in, I mumbled. I was getting an idea. Maybe it would work, and maybe not. But at that point, it wasn't like we could stay in the hall and blend into the wallpaper. As soon as Miller got the door open, I booked it straight into the bathroom. I grabbed my pajama top out of my suitcase, put it on over my t-shirt, messed up my hair, and zoomed back over to the door.
What are you doing? Miller said,
but I didn't stop. Just stay out of sight, I said. Then I opened the door again and leaned out into the hall, but only halfway so my pants and sneakers didn't show. Security guy spotted me right away.
You're supposed to be in your room, he said,
kind of shouting and whispering at the same time. Sorry, I said. I made my face all squinty like I'd just woken up, and the bright lights were messing with my eyes. I thought I heard someone out here.
Yeah, the guy said, like I was the dumbest kid who ever visited from America. That was me.
Oh, I said. Right. Well, good night, then. That was it. A second later, I was back inside with Miller breathing down my neck.
What's that supposed to do? He said.
I just put a finger on my mouth to keep him quiet. A second later, I heard someone outside the door. Security guy was right there. Miller leaned in. So did I. The next thing we heard was this tiny rubbing sound, while he put that piece of blue tape back in place. And bam! Mission accomplished! You should have seen the look on Miller's face. It was like he couldn't believe Rafe Squeakadorian had just pulled that off.
Okay, that was actually kind of cool, he said.
Thanks, I said. It was like the best conversation we'd ever had, so I kept going. Hey, Miller, I said, speaking of cool, it's kind of cold in that bathroom. I was just wondering if...
Nah, you're still sleeping in there, he said,
and flopped out on his bed.
And keep it down, by the way. I'm beat.
Oh, well. It was worth a shot, anyway. Chapter 27 Loser and Leo in How to Speak British. Speaking British for Yanks. Lesson 1. Loser? Loser! I guess we'll start without him. Can I get a volunteer from the audience? I'll help. Hi, Jeannie. Welcome to How to Speak British. Lesson 1. If someone in England asks if you want some chips, the answer is always yes. French fries are called chips here, and chips are called crisps. And by the way, pudding doesn't come in cups over here, but it's still really good. A truck is called a lorry. The elevator is a lift. Soccer is called football here, and football is called American football. In England, the bathroom is called the loo. Class dismissed. Chapter 28 Up and Adam. I woke up early the next morning, and I woke up thinking about all the work I had to do. And Jeannie, and Mrs. Stricker, and the whole editor-in-chief thing. Especially the editor-in-chief thing. I had 3 days left to get this report, and my act together, So even though it was super early, I got up and went down to the learning center. I was hoping maybe I could get a jump start on my day. But you know who else gets up early to do homework? Smart people. People like Jeannie Galetta, for instance. People exactly like Jeannie Galetta. When I walked into that room, there she was, working away at one of the computers. Time out for a second. You know those corny romantic comedies? Well, if life were really like those movies, I would have taken one look at Jeannie and said, "I may be up early, but is it too late for you and me?" And Jeannie would say, "But my plane for the skydiving convention in New Zealand leaves in an hour." And I'd say, "Do you think there's room for me on that plane?" And she'd hold up two tickets and say, "There just might be." Then somehow, we'd end up outside in the pouring rain, where we'd probably kiss. No, definitely kiss. Just as a super romantic pop hit starts playing in the background. That's what always happens in those movies. Even though I'm not sure why pouring rain is supposed to be so romantic. But it doesn't matter anyway, because we weren't in a movie. I don't sound anything like that, and it wasn't even raining out. It was just me, standing there at 6 in the morning, looking like a doof. "Hey," Jeannie said when she saw me. "Hey," I said. "What are you doing down here?" "I wanted to work on my report," she said. "What about you?" "I wanted to work on my report," I said. And then we both kind of smiled. I probably should have said more, but my brain felt like the world's emptiest rubbish bin. That's what they call a garbage can in England. So Jeannie went next. "Rafe, I'm really sorry about yesterday," she said. "I do want to win that contest, but I shouldn't have said what I did." "It's okay," I said. It was, too. "The truth is, you were right. I don't know what I'm doing, and I could really use some help." Then Jeannie pulled out the chair next to hers and waved at me to come sit down. "Maybe we could just start over," she said. So, even though it wasn't a movie, Jeannie almost made it feel like one. Which only made me like her more. Which was a good feeling and a bad feeling at the same time, if you know what I mean. And if you don't, just trust me on this one. Chapter 29. Artist in Chief. The time flew by after that, right up until breakfast. Jeannie showed me a bunch of great stuff we could do to make the report better, and I showed her some of my videos to see what she thought. "These are great," she said, more than once. "They're like moving paintings. We should call you the Artist in Chief." I liked that. A lot. Because the fact is, I have a way better chance of getting an A in art than I do in social studies, or anything else. "Thanks," I said. "But I still don't know what I'm doing. I wish I was half as smart as you about all this stuff." That's when Jeannie got this look on her face that I'd never seen before. "Are you thinking what I'm thinking?" she asked me. "I have no idea," I said. I never know what girls are thinking. "Well, it's not exactly against the rules for me to help. And maybe we just don't tell Mrs. Stricker about it," Jeannie said. "So what do you think, Rafe? Do you want a secret partner?" I actually wondered if she was joking. Jeannie's pretty straight-laced, if you know what I mean. She's not the first person you'd run to if you wanted to rob a bank. Or even fake a hall pass. But it was also kind of perfect. Jeannie had the brains. I had the creativity. Jeannie was super competitive. I knew a thing or two about being sneaky. Jeannie really wanted to win that contest. I really wanted whatever Jeannie wanted. "Deal?" she said. "Secret deal," I said, and we shook on it.
"What secret deal?" someone said.
When I turned around, Jared was standing in the learning center door. He just snuck right up on us, like the flu. You know, if the flu played guitar and lacrosse, and had perfect teeth.
"Hey, Jared," Jeannie said. "I'm helping Rafe out with the editor-in-chief stuff, but we don't want Mrs. Stricker to know. At least, not until we win that contest. Right, Rafe?"
Sure, I said.
Supposedly, this was a good thing. Even Jared could see that, right? I hadn't stolen Jeannie's job, and everything she'd just told him proved it. Right? Still, there was something about the way Jared kept looking at me. I'm not going to say he seemed jealous, because, let's be honest, that would be like a turkey club being jealous of the dribble of mayo on the side of the plate. But I don't think he liked me having secret meetings with his girlfriend, or holding her hand either, which I wasn't doing, even if it looked that way. We were just shaking on it.
"So don't tell anyone about this, okay?" Jeannie asked him.
Jared gave that weird smile of his again, the kind that looked like the opposite of a smile.
"Sure," he said. "No problem."
Except it didn't sound like no problem to me at all. It sounded a lot more like big problem. Chapter 30. Beans for Breakfast. Sorry, really quick timeout. Nothing to do with the story or all the disasters I had going on, but if you ever want a great breakfast, go to England. Baked beans with your eggs? Delicious, no matter how weird it sounds. Those Brits know how to start the day right. Just saying, you won't go home hungry. Again, sorry for the interruption. This breakfast just really deserved its own chapter. It was that good. And now I'm hungry again. Chapter 31. Unassigned Seats. By the time we got on the bus that morning, I was ready for Mrs. Stricker. "You did this?" she asked me. I'd just handed her a whole sheet of assignments for the day, so everyone would know who was supposed to write about what, who was taking pictures, and that kind of thing. It was all Jeannie's idea, but I wrote it up, so technically, I did do it. "Well, this looks acceptable," Stricker said. "But we're going to need 40 copies, one for each..." "Right here," I said, and handed them over, still warm from the hotel copier. "Oh," Stricker said. I don't think she saw that coming. Thanks again, Jeannie. Anyway, the only empty seat on the bus by then was next to Miller. I wasn't sure what to expect from him after our little roof mission, but he didn't say a word when I sat down. He didn't even look up from his phone. Not until Mrs. Stricker got to my name during roll call. And then, sure enough, "Here!" I'll give him this much. His stupid imitation of me was getting better all the time. Mrs. Stricker just made another check mark and kept going. Then, ping! Miller got a new text and went right back to his phone. It was pretty clear something was still up with him. He was thumbing at that screen like he wanted to break through the glass. Obviously, that only made me more curious, but I had to be strategic about this. If I was patient, maybe I could find out what Miller's problem was and stop being his favorite chew toy for a while. Emphasis on the maybe. So I went back to scribbling in my notebook. I'd worry about Miller later. I had a ton of new ideas for videos, and I was getting pretty excited about this project, too. It was like a whole new ball game, now that I had a secret partner and an official new job title. Or at least an unofficial one. All thanks to you-know-who. Chapter 32. Not bad, just weird. When we got to the Saatchi Gallery, well, first of all, whoa. I bet Ms. Donatello put that place on the schedule, because she likes weird art the way my dog likes sniffing butts, That's a lot, if you've never met Junior. And this place was definitely weird with a capital W. I'd never seen art like it. In one room, it was all just giant sculptures of nuts and bolts. In another room, the walls and ceiling were covered in clear boxes filled with dirt and rocks, so it felt like you were underground. Another room had a sound exhibit, where you were supposed to just sit on a bench and listen. There were recordings of waterfalls and leaky faucets, but also people talking about money at the same time. So, like I said, weird, weirder, and weirdest. But also very cool. I kept my camera going the whole time. And best of all, Jeannie was right there to help out. There was also a room with an exhibit called Modern Nudes, but Mrs. Stricker put the lid on that one faster than a box of hornets. Nobody was allowed anywhere near it. Meanwhile, everyone else was following their assignment sheets. They were taking pictures and making notes and doing everything like they were supposed to. It was amazing how much better the whole thing went, just from that simple plan Jeannie made up. And as far as I could tell, Mrs. Stricker didn't suspect a thing. Or maybe she was too busy policing the naked stuff. Either way, that thin ice I'd been on was starting to feel just a little bit thicker. So far, so good. Chapter 33. The World's a Stage. You're probably going to think this is a strange question, but do you believe in signs? I don't mean like stop and no trespassing. I mean like when you think someone, somewhere, is trying to tell you something. Because that's what happened at our next stop, the Old Globe Theater. This place is super famous. The original Globe was where William Shakespeare put on his own plays back in the 1600s, and they still do his stuff there today. So after we got a tour, they brought these actors out on stage to perform some scenes for us. The first one was from a play called The Comedy of Errors. After that, they did something from Hamlet. Then finally, there was a scene from Romeo and Juliet. That was the one Shakespeare play I knew anything about, because Ms. Donatello made us read parts of it in sixth grade. And here's where it really got interesting, at least in my head. First of all, this was the part I'd assigned myself to do a written report on. I was taking notes instead of video this time, and writing stuff down as fast as I could. So instead of writing Romeo and Juliet on the page, I just wrote R&J. That's right. R&J. Did you notice anything crazy awesome there? Like how those initials could stand for some other people? Like maybe Rafe and Jeannie? I definitely noticed. Ms. Donatello says that Shakespeare's stuff is full of symbolism. So that got me thinking. Maybe this was a symbol for something. Or a sign. Like maybe Leo was right. Maybe I really was supposed to tell Jeannie how I felt about her. I mean, this was Romeo and Juliet, supposedly the greatest love story ever written. Not only that, but the whole scene was about Juliet up on her balcony saying, "Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo?" while he's down below, getting up the guts to talk to her. Sound familiar? I mean, don't get me wrong. Honestly, I probably knew it was just a big fat coincidence. But for a second there, a microsecond, it felt like more than a coincidence. So by the time the scene was over, I decided that Leo was right. I had to say something, even if it was just one tiny little thing. Maybe I'd just mention that R&J part and see what Jeannie said. I could at least do that, right? So after the show, when Jared was talking to someone else, I just happened to wind up standing next to Jeannie. Then I just happened to wait around until she noticed me. "Did you like that?" I asked her. "Yeah, it was great," Jeannie said. "Especially the Romeo and Juliet stuff," I said. Then I kept going before my heart could start beating loud enough for Jeannie to hear it. In fact, it was kind of funny because,
Funny?
Jeannie gave me this look.
Did you ever read the whole play? She asked.
Just the parts Ms. D assigned, I said. Why?
Well, spoiler alert, but they both die at the end, she said.
They do?